Hearing none, the report is approved. Before I share some brief remarks as your new provost, first I'd like to welcome you to this meeting. It's wonderful to have met some of you. I'm looking forward to meet more of you. But Senate Secretary has asked to share a few words before I speak to you on a personal capacity.
So, yes, thank you all for being here, including all of our visitors. This has been an exciting year for us to have visitors from the first meeting on. We weren't very popular previously. And now, obviously, that's why everybody's here. There's, for folks who are visiting, just to remember, senators all have floor privileges. But, of course, after senators have said their piece, if time allows, then visitors will also be recognized at the discretion of the presiding officer. So we'll be privileging senators as our bylaws require, and as parliamentary niceties also require, all senators should only speak once on every issue that is on the floor until all the senators who wish to speak once on that issue have done so. We'll do our best to keep track of it, and our facilitators today are, as always, Carolyn Clark, who is our chair of steering, Sarah Watson, who is our chair of faculty council, and Valerie, as always, Williams, who'll be manning the Zoom desk and who's our incoming chair of faculty council. As if there are procedural questions and concerns, please feel free to contact one of us. Well, probably them, because I'll be up here. Although, come on up. I also want to just take a moment to thank our new provost for stepping into this spot at this moment when J.R. Blackburn, the president's chief of staff, called and said, "Actually, the provost would like to run this meeting." I said, "Did you explain to him what this meeting is?" And JR was like, "Yeah." He's like, he said, "It's my duty." And I will say that when the faculty leaders met with him during his one of his visits to campus during the hiring process, we walked out of that meeting and said, "I think we're going to have a really good partner for shared governance if he comes here." And your willingness to be here with us now, this is often not the place where we have strong divisions and feelings, means a lot to all of us. And we are very grateful and excited to hear from you in the near future at Senate about your goals and plans and your new role. So thank you and welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, Jared. It's a pleasure to be here. The president is unable to join us. He's on travel. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you. I know this meeting is an important one, an interesting one, and we take on together in this unique model of shared governance, things that are important for the university. I have been at a few good places. This model of administrators, faculty, staff, students coming together in this body deliberatively, taking on important issues and hard issues, is actually wonderful in a certain way. And I'm delighted to preside over this meeting. I come to Ohio State from Emory University, having served there as a provost for 3 years. And what brings me to Ohio State has sort of borne true in the 2 weeks that I've been here, visiting the engineering school this morning and arts and sciences just before this meeting. This is a special place. It is excellent in multiple ways. This notion of education through citizenship is a special, appealing one. In general, in higher ed, I believe we have a noble mission, the mission of investigating, interrogating things that we don't yet understand fully, whether it's curing cancer, to examining our society and how we're organized, to issues of peace, to issues of the mind and wellness and things like this. It's a noble mission because I can't think of any other institution whose job it is to investigate things that we don't yet fully understand. That is our job at the university and as a research university. The other mission we have is that of education and mentoring and being good stewards to our students and their time here, and in many ways shaping the future through our work with our students. I often say that I'm one of the lucky people in the world to work at universities, and particularly this one with its land-grant mission and commitment to the state of Ohio, that I'm proud to come to work work for an institution that has this mission, and to foster excellence in all of the spaces that we do work in, and interpret what it means, what academic excellence means. And my hope is, at a future time, Secretary, with the permission of the steering committee, I would like to come back and share some early thoughts on building academic excellence, doing that in partnership with all of you. I'm very grateful for President Carter giving me the opportunity to serve Ohio State and the trustees and all those involved in the selection process. And I think we have the opportunity to do something special at Ohio State in the next few years. And I don't know exactly what that will look like, but we get to co-define that journey. And I look forward to going on that journey with you. So thank you for the opportunity to speak for a little bit. The first item this afternoon is a proposal from the Senate office and endorsed by the steering committee to approve the Senate calendar for 25-26. This item will be presented by our own Senate Secretary, Jared Gardner.
Just to speed things along, since it's you guys all have access to the calendar on the website materials, this is an annual ritual that is also a last chance for anybody to let us know if we have missed anything in terms of the incredibly complicated juggling act of finding place for all of our Senate meetings, as well as faculty council meetings and so on, that don't conflict or conflict as minimally as possible with major holidays, reading days, and so on. Hope you've all had a chance to look at it. I haven't heard any suggestions. Steering took a look at it and thought it looked good, but we need to formally vote on it today.
So this proposal comes from a standing committee of the Senate and therefore does not require a second. This item is open for discussion now. Hearing no motion for discussion, please indicate your vote on Carmen's site.
Oh, I did see one. Sorry.
We have someone online who wanted to speak. Could they have their hands raised?
Sure.
Sorry there, Kenneth. I didn't see you. Please.
Yeah, the year says 24-25.
Yes. Yep. Sorry. Yes, that should be 25-26. Knew we missed something in looking at all the details scrupulously. Ivy and I will get that fixed before it goes up online.
Do we need a motion to have that be fixed?
I think we can treat that as friendly.
Okay, that's a friendly amendment. With that friendly amendment, can we please vote?
Yeah, we looked at everything except the year.
Are you able to see the votes, or Ivy will tell us?
Ivy will check the votes for us. All set.
We're good? The resolution passes? The resolution passes. That's a good start. So our next item is a resolution brought to the Senate by the Council of Graduate Students. The resolution concerns the recent and announced changes to technology access impacting all members of the community. Sabrina Durso, the president of the Graduate Student Council, will present the resolution. I saw Sabrina in the room.
Make sure your mic's on, Sabrina.
Hi, everybody. Nice to see you all. I hope that you all had a chance to read the CGS resolution on OTDI policies and licensing. I was very grateful to be able to talk to President Carter and Provost Belmaconda about, and the rest of steering, about the resolution before we came here today. But largely it outlines that Adobe was taken kind of away from us without CGS ever having any chance to give feedback on Adobe. That's really crucial to us as graduate students, as our dissertations and our theses need to go through an accessibility check. And so that is something that drastically impacted us. And we were also very concerned about the Microsoft everything going from 5 terabytes to 500 megabytes, gigabytes. And so we largely outlined those concerns. We took those to steering, and we've been told that we have very good news about this resolution today. So I would open the floor to discussion if I'm allowed to do that.
Yeah, let me thank you for that, Sabine. As I understand it, the Graduate Student Council is asking the Senate to endorse this resolution. As the proposal does not come from a standing committee, it will require a second. So could I please have a second? Thank you. So before we go into a discussion, as Sabrina was alluding to, I'd like to invite my colleague, Chris Kaburek, to give us an update. I saw Chris in the room. There's Chris. Would you mind introducing yourself, Chris, because I'm new. Chris is only a little bit less new. So, thank you, Chris.
Thank you. I'm glad when Robbie came on board, because now I'm not the most junior ranking member of the President of the Cabinet, so thank you, Provost. I appreciate the resolution. I think quickly, there's a lot going on in higher education, so I want to be clear that I think the OTDI team was dealing with some extreme financial pressures, and I think the strategies that they laid out were very well intended, but I think my message to you is that we hear you. And we want to take this opportunity, giving, there's quite a bit of change going on. OTDI now, many probably know, is now reporting through my team, administration and planning, but Robbie's on week two, I'm on month two. We are in the midst of a new search of a new vice president and chief information officer. So we think the common sense approach here is to take a pause on some of these recommendations and really work with all of you through the shared governance process to determine what is the best long-range strategy to deal with this issue. I'll be candid, we have to deal with this issue. The technology costs continue to escalate, and we're gonna have to figure out what the best path forward is. There are going to be change, there's going to be impact on all of us. But I think we hear you, we heard the concerns of the graduate students. I appreciate the resolution. Really thank President Carter, Mike Papadakis. I think we are committed to find funding to continue to anyone that needs to have the Creative Cloud Adobe license. We will figure that out. And we're going to delay the OneDrive storage solution limitations, at least temporarily for the next, 6 months, a year, and then work through our shared governance process on a path forward. So I thanks for the opportunity to comment. I think for the resolution, we hear you, we want to work with you and be good partners, and hopefully by this time next year, we'll working together, have a better path forward.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks. And now the floor is open for discussion. Yes.
That's wonderful news. I really credit the CGS for elevating this issue in a way that got some attention, just so I can report back accurately to my constituents. We're pausing the storage thing, but the Adobe Illustrator Creative Cloud is being handled more on a if you need a subscription, reach out to us. It's not something that's going to come back as everybody has it. Okay, thank you.
Any others who wish to add to the discussion? Yes.
Thanks. Hello, everyone. Bobby McAlpine, president of the Undergraduate Student Government and Undergraduate Student Body. I just wanted to say that being the chief spokesperson for the undergraduate students and as well all of our senators and things like that, we fully endorse this resolution. And also, I would like to say thank you so much. I know you came in when this was all pretty much in motion. So thanks for doing that. It really means a lot, you know, coming from such a supportive president's cabinet to students. So really appreciate it. Whenever and wherever you all need help, we have a 350-person organization that comes from across the campus within the undergraduate student government that can help, however, to come up with common sense solutions for this. But thanks so much.
Thank you, Bobby. Any other discussion?
I would just like to say, as Chair Steering and one of the faculty representatives, that we also have talked about this and fully endorsed this resolution, particularly the call out for clear communication, collaboration, and inclusion through the process of shared governance. I think that's important for students. I think faculty feel similarly and hope to bring similar issues and conversations forward around technology access. So we look forward to this partnership.
I'm not able to see the screen. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, I'll just check here if there's anything. Doesn't look like any hands up.
Seeing no other hands online or here, are we ready to call the question? Please indicate your vote on Carmen's side. This is to express support for the resolution as stated. All right, the resolution passes. Thank you, Sabrina.
I just want to say thank you very much, Chris Ford, for talking with me so quickly about this, and President Carter and the Provost. And if I can just have my academic affairs raise their hands, because they're really the ones that pushed this and did all of the research to make sure it was good. So, thank you.
Shared governance is working.
Don't speak to
that. I know. The next item of business is a proposal from the Senate's Council for Academic Affairs to establish the Salmon P. Chase Center for Civics, Culture, and Society. Before I ask Chair Sue Sutherland to present, I'd like to invite Senator Trevor Brown to give us a little bit of context for this next discussion that will ensue. Appreciate it.
Good afternoon. Can my friends online hear me? Somebody just give me a thumbs up. Great. So as you just heard, my name is Trevor Brown. I serve as Dean of the John Glenn College of Public Affairs, also serve as Interim Dean of the Fisher College of Business. Provost Bellinconda asked me to give a little bit of context and background on the Salmon P. Chase Center. Some of you have heard versions of this before, but many of you may have not. So for those of you who have heard some of the history of how we got to where we are, apologies that I'm going to go over that ground, but for some of you, this will be new. But the intent here is to just give you a sort of a factual understanding of where we are and why we as a university made the choices that we have, and then that will set up Sue's presentation of the Council on Academic Affairs proposal around the center. So 18 months ago, the Ohio legislature, through its budget bill, asked for the creation of 5 civic centers across the state of Ohio at 5 different universities. Ohio State was one of those universities. funding was provided for 2 years through the state's biennial budget to launch the center. And the mandate was to hire an executive director and create a center for the study of civics, culture, and society rooted in the American tradition. There was also the requirement that 15 faculty be hired, that the center be an independent academic unit with curricular authority and promotion and tenure authority, and that it be physically located in the John Glenn College of Public Affairs, but an independent academic unit. So the law was clear, and the university then had a choice. The Board of Trustees supported the adherence to the law and had the choice to, at that moment, stand up the center, hire a director following the guidance of the law. But we as a university decided to try and do our best to align the guidance from the law with our university processes and practices. So at that moment, the Office of Academic Affairs charged four of us, myself, Vice Provost for Academic Affairs, Randy Smith, Brandon Lester from the Office of Legal Affairs, and Ben Kanzig from the Office of Government Affairs to begin to plan how we would do our best to align university policies and practices with the guidance from the state legislature. Our first step was to work collaboratively to find, to form what was required by the law, an academic advisory council of seven members who would be six academics from outside the university and one academic from inside Ohio State University. For those of you who are interested, I can assure you all seven of those are esteemed academics. They are folks in the fields of history, of law, of political science, a variety of disciplines. And the representative for Ohio State University was Vladimir Kogan, a faculty member in the Department of Political Science, and a courtesy faculty appointment in the John Glenn College of Public Affairs. That body's duty was to conduct the search for the first director of the center. That is its duty and responsibility. It conducted that search, made recommendations to the university's president slash provost and the Board of Trustees, and the selected candidate was Professor Lee Strang, who's online joining us, who came to us from the University of Toledo, and he became the inaugural director of the center. Part two of our efforts were to put forward a proposal. Given that it was in the John Glenn College of Public Affairs, physically located, came forward to the Council on Academic Affairs with a request for temporary center status. That was step two in beginning to align it with university's policies and practices. So that was over a year ago. That process commenced. It was approved by the Council on Academic Affairs, and it gave us the ability to begin to engage various constituencies around the university to stand up the center. The third thing that we did was then to convene an internal academic advisory council of folks representing the various units that would likely be impacted, connected, and hopefully collaborating with the Chase Center. I was there on behalf of the John Glenn College of Public Affairs. We had folks from various disciplines within arts and sciences, representatives from the College of Law, College of Education and Human Ecology, as well as leaders of the various faculty governance bodies here in the university. So that body has been meeting monthly, on average, breaks for holidays, et cetera, throughout the year to give us guidance and input on, again, how best to align the center with university policy and practice. So we have had an inclusive, deliberative, collaborative process to try and seek input about how best to move that forward. Once Lee was hired, Professor Strang, as many of you know, he has embarked on reaching out to as many constituencies as he can, faculty members, department chairs, college deans, students, student representatives, to share his vision for the center, as well as to seek input on how best to coordinate and collaborate. Randy and I, in our leadership role of that academic advisory committee, also simultaneously conducted a landscape analysis of all the curriculum and co-curricular activities in the civics space, in the citizenship space, and the civic leadership space, and have shared that with Professor Strang in the spirit of trying to create a collaborative approach to how we launch this center. There are obviously overlaps with existing entities here on campus, the Center for Ethics and Human Values, the John Glenn College of Public Affairs, various departments across the arts and sciences and other places. And our intent was to try and create a collaborative, participatory, complementary process in standing this up, knowing again that the legislation allows that the center could just be stood up. And so Professor Strang has endeavored to meet that spirit of shared governance. And to that end, we then have gone through, or he has gone through, the development of a proposal that Sue is going to share with you in a minute, that went through the university's shared governance processes. And the intent here, too, is to launch the center in that spirit of shared governance. So passage of this proposal will allow that shared governance process to continue. And that is the hope, and that is what we have sought to achieve with going through this very deliberative, extended process, knowing, again, that a year and a half ago, the legislation specified that the university should stand up the center, hire a director, and then hire 15 faculty. Shared governance has been a wonderful way to get input, but it has slowed our process down in being able for Professor Strang to go out on the market and begin to meet the requirements of the law. So that is why we are trying to move with all deliberate speed to try and advance this proposal through. But I think it's, again, just important to have that context in how we as a university chose to take this particular path, even though the law required us to move expeditiously to stand this up, in the spirit of trying to continue our commitment to shared governance. That, I hand it back to
thank you so much, Senator Brown. That was very helpful. At this point, I'd like to invite our CAA Chair, Sue Sutherland, to please present the motion.
Good afternoon, everyone. Hopefully you can hear me. So, as Chair of the Council of Academic Affairs, which, as you know, is the standing committee of the University Senate, I'm here to present the whereas statements and resolution that resulted from the CAA review and discussion of the Chase Center proposal. This proposal went through a detailed review at CAA, which included the CAA subcommittee, interacting frequently with Professor Lee Strang and other OSU administrators and different constituent bodies. By reviewing the center proposal, as Trevor just said, through CAA and Senate, we're able to engage in the process of shared governance that allows us to ensure that the center follows established practices around personnel, curriculum, and fiscal matters. As you've seen in the proposal packet, there are many whereas statements. It is not my intent to read them all. To save some time, I'm going to highlight certain statements related to the background of the establishment of the center and the CAA process, deliberations, and vote. If you're interested in reading the entire whereas statements, it's on the university website as part of the proposal packet. So, whereas the Salmon P. Chase Center for Civics, Culture, and Society was created in 2023 by the state of Ohio via statute, Ohio Revised Code 3335.39. I'm not going to continue to say Ohio Revised Code, just getting the first one out there. The Chase Center was established as an independent academic unit within the Ohio State University that shall conduct teaching and research in the historical ideas, traditions, and texts that have shaped the American constitutional order and society. And the center will have the authority to house tenure-track faculty who hold their appointments in the center and to offer courses and develop certificate, minor, and major programs, as well as graduate programs and offer degrees. And whereas the Chase Center shall be led by its executive director in accord with its enabling legislation. Whereas to align with the development and approval of this center with the established process for university-level centers, the Council on Academic Affairs granted temporary status in September 2023 with an expectation of a proposal for full center status once a director was appointed. And in October 24, the new center director submitted a proposal for full university status to the council, and it was assigned to a 5-member council subcommittee, supplemented with faculty representative from the University Research Committee and the Senate Fiscal Committee. Whereas the subcommittee met with the executive director, the interim executive vice president and provost, and 2 associate vice presidents for government affairs for input on the establishment and continuation of the Chase Center. The council subcommittee ensured that all components of a center proposal were addressed and gave considerable attention to aspects of implementation following center designation. And once approved, the center will report to the executive vice president and provost, and implementation issues will be overseen by the Office of Academic Affairs. With regard to personnel matters, the center will adhere to all applicable expectations of an academic unit for hiring, promotion, and tenure, including the establishment of a pattern of administration and appointment, promotion, and tenure documents. Working directly with the Vice Provost for Academic Policy and Faculty Resources. With regard to curricular programming, the center will adhere to all applicable expectations of an academic unit for course, certificate, program, and degree review and approval, working directly with the Vice Provost for Academic Programs. With regard to fiscal viability, given that 2 years of funding have thus far been secured and an ambitious plan for hiring is proposed, the center's budget will be approved annually by the executive vice president and provost and managed by the Finance and Services Office in the Office of Academic Affairs, supporting the enactment of a plan for responsible growth, and also will work with leadership in the offices of business and finance, government affairs, and advancement on future funding and sources. With regard to overall planning, the executive director will continue to consult with faculty, undergraduate, graduate, and professional students and staff in both formal and informal settings to help shape the future of the center. And the center will be assessed through statutorily required annual reports to the Ohio Senate and the Board of Trustees that will be shared with the Council of Academic Affairs. Per OAA Academic Organization Curriculum and Assessment Handbook, centers are reviewed per university policy to address the need to ensure cost-effective and successful stewardship of university resources and the need for centers to provide valued and productive services to the university. And the center's sustainability will be evaluated in terms of past, current, and projected performance related to fiscal and academic operations. And the Council on Academic Affairs will conduct its review process during the center's 2nd, 4th, and 6th years, and 8th years, we should say, because it's up every 4 years. The Council of Academic Affairs discussed the proposal at its meeting on December 4th, 2024, and further discussed and approved the proposal at its meeting on December 11th, 2024. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the University Senate approved the proposal to establish the Salmon P. Chase Center for Civics, Culture, and Society by acknowledging its statutory authority to house tenure-track faculty who hold their appointments in the center and to offer courses and develop certificate, minor, and major programs, as well as graduate programs and offer degrees, inform the Board of Trustees of this action that will take effect immediately thereafter.
Thank you, Professor Sutherland, and thank you to the Council as well as your subcommittee for the important work so far. This proposal comes to us from a standing committee of the Senate and therefore does not require a second. The resolution is now open for discussion. There is a mic that will open. Thank you.
And sorry, just real quick, just for to let people on Zoom know and to remind you, if you wish to join the queue and you're a senator at this time, please use your raise hand reaction. I'm capturing names, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm Susan Cole. I'm a faculty senator representing Arts and Sciences, National Mathematical Sciences. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. First, I want to acknowledge many things are going to be and have been and will be said about the center that I think are true. It was created by legislative fiat in a social context where there's increased distrust of academia. It's difficult not to feel that the creation of the center reflects a lack of understanding of what the university and higher education exist for and shows a lack of trust in our faculty. The center was created to address an issue I believe does not exist. We have a robust history of teaching civics, history, and it's reflected in our actual motto, Education for Citizenship. And I know in my classes and the classes of my colleagues, we support and guide students through difficult conversations on controversial topics. And I acknowledge that the creation was done in ways that contradict the foundational rules that govern our university. However, even if the center's not necessary, that doesn't mean it can't find a place here. I've been really encouraged by Director Strang's open communication with many constituencies, and I have colleagues who are interested in becoming fellows of the center, so people I trust and respect are finding some good in it. I really appreciate that Director Strang engaged with the colleagues who I trust in CAA and put forth a proposal that assures, to the degree allowed by the legislation, that the center will conform to university policies around hiring and curricular development. And I appreciate that regular review and oversight by this Senate body through CAA is included in the proposal, which means that the Chase Center will be subject to the same expectations as other centers and will be dissolved if it becomes inviable. Even if we believe that the creation of the center was a move to score political points, I don't think it means that we need to respond with a move to score political points. If today's vote fails, the center will still exist. What we may lose if the vote fails is the expectation that the center will continue to be governed by existing university policies, and it will operate under Senate oversight as outlined in the proposal before us. To me, that loss outweighs what might be gained by voting against it.
Thank you.
My name is Ashley Hope.
Snow.
All right, let me try again.
Yep.
My name is Ashley Hope Perez. I'm an associate professor of comparative studies and a senator representing the Arts and Humanities Division. Mr. Vice President, I want to first thank the Committee on Academic Affairs, my fellow senators, the university leadership, and all involved in the extraordinary efforts to responsibly steer the implementation of the Chase Center. To bring this stewardship to fruition, I call on Senate to amend the language of the CAA resolution brought before us today. This amendment stresses the need to document financial restraints to protect OSU from fiscal harms. These harms, even if not immediate, are very likely to result from insufficient checks on the terms by which tenure-track faculty are brought into the center. And to be clear, the statute specifies an allotment of 15, no fewer than 15 tenure-track positions, not necessarily new hiring. Bringing this amendment on the floor today comes after months of gathering and voicing faculty concerns to Senate leaders and administrators. This specific fiscal issue has been raised repeatedly since the fall. Draft amendment language was offered in advance for consideration. Even as many efforts have been made to expedite the approval process, there is no statutory deadline. Nevertheless, if time is of the essence in voting on the resolution, faculty rules provide the option of calling a special Senate session. In other words, asking the Senate to vote on an amendment today in no way obstructs our ability for a timely vote on the full resolution to implement the center. Before I read out the language of the amendment, I note two reasons it is needed. First, Senate has a responsibility to advocate for the best interests of the university and to consider the future consequences of decisions made today. In particular, we must act now to ensure that the implementation of this center does not result in the diversion of resources from existing university programs. To protect the university, the resolution must document the expectation that the center maintain funds sufficient to cover the long-term costs of salary and benefits for any tenure track hires. Tenure track hiring is a lifetime financial commitment. The costs of salary and benefits for Chase Center faculty become university obligations if, at any time, the center cannot pay them. No matter the assurances from the director or state house today, the fact remains the center only has 2 years of confirmed legislative funding. The fiscal landscape or priorities of the legislature may well shift in the years or decades ahead. Second, expectations and limits must be captured in writing to preserve their relevance to future directors, administrators, and senators. Senate appreciates the assurances from administrators and the director regarding responsible implementation of the Chase Center. The people in these roles will change over time, however, and written commitments are essential. We must document the fiscal viability of the center, but this pertains to long-term, not just immediate costs. Therefore, I move to amend the resolution on the Chase Center proposal with the following language. This language would appear at the end of the existing paragraph that begins with regard to fiscal viability. Quote, a plan for responsible growth will include specific efforts to draw on the existing pool of talented and interested OSU faculty as part of the center's tenure track recruitment, confirmation that before any new tenure track hiring, the center has sufficient resources to pay each scholar's salary and benefits to retirement, and commitment to the cost neutrality of the center to the university immediately and long-term. Thank you.
Is there a second for this motion? I hear a motion.
A second.
Indeed. Yeah. So we now have a discussion on the amendment as proposed. So we need to discuss this amendment before we can
just to be clear, unless you wish to speak on this amendment, I'll hold the queue that was building up before until after we've resolved this new motion on the floor.
So do we wish to discuss this amendment? Go ahead.
Thank you for the amendment, and I really appreciate your thoughtfulness about the financial implications of this. The one thing that I really worry about with this amendment is the bullet point expecting the center to somehow have cash on hand to cover a faculty member through to retirement. This is not something we expect from any unit. I'm not convinced it's an idea we want to put in the legislature's heads. I think it's important for the center to commit to neutrality, but asking them not to be able to do any hiring unless they have that kind of cash on hand seems unreasonable to me.
Online, sorry.
Looks like Alan Davis, did you want to speak to this?
We had somebody else in the queue here. Dakota.
Oh, Dakota's hand just showed up on my end, sorry.
Hi, this is a mostly just a kind of a procedural request, and I appreciate the conversation about this. I'm just wondering if there's some way that the text of the amendment could maybe be dropped in the chat for folks who are online or somewhere else put online so we could actually look at that. Thanks.
Can you email it to me?
Hello. I'm Wolfgang Windel, faculty senator from engineering. I fully support this amendment. Usually when we hire tenure track faculty, there is a faculty line, which means we have a funded position, which is thought to be funded through retirement. Think about what door we would open if we would just allow external entities to create new positions at will at OSU. We just talked about how hard it is for us to pay for Adobe and OneDrive. I think fiscal responsibility is really important for us. And I think having this amendment to ensure that this is fiscally sensible is really essential here. And what my previous speaker said, that this is, I don't know what kind of word you used, but I think this is extremely sensible. And from somebody who comes from quantitative sciences, I completely understand and support this.
Any others wish to?
Alan, did you want to speak to the amendment on the floor?
I like you being able to speak once we go out of the amendment, because I was already on.
Sure, I'll keep you on the queue there, absolutely.
Non-senator would like to speak.
Sure, I recognize.
Thanks. I'm Brett Harris, the Vice President for Resource and Budget Management and Academic Affairs. Just one point of clarification. We do not have guaranteed faculty lines for tenure track faculty in any college department or center. Just wanted to make that clear. There is no guarantee of a faculty line until retirement.
Brian, would you mind telling us then what our process is to ensure that folks who want to hire tenure track faculty have the financial means to do so?
Sure. And the way that we have been working on this proposal with the center is, like you've heard earlier, that we will be managing the budget for the center like we do any of the other centers or institutes. It is unique in that it has tenure track faculty, and there is that long-term obligation. That is true. But we will, like other centers and institutes and even our departments and colleges, have an annual budget meeting. Faculty lines and approval for those lines in the future and long-term will be part of an annual budget meeting that we have with academic affairs like we do the other centers and institutes. I wanted to point out, too, that some of you may not know that there isn't any long-term guarantee of resources in other centers or institutes. So it would be unusual in this case to say that that was part of a requirement. We don't have a requirement that any of our centers or institutes have a long-term sustainable budget. It's part of an annual budget process and meeting that takes place with academic affairs in this case as they report to us.
Hi, is this on? Okay. I just want to point out, and this will probably come up in the discussion later around this beyond the amendment, but that we are in a week in which SB 83 has just been revived yesterday as SB 1, and these are related issues related in sponsor SB 117. And one of the things that I think we hear as a concern out of the State House is about the state writing a blank check to do what we will, and that being about fiscal responsibility and about taxpayer money and what Ohioans deserve and whatnot. And I think it's our responsibility to ensure as much as possible that we do have fiscal sustainability for any program we start. And while we may not have certain very long-term guarantees in our budgeting for centers, we do have much more thorough projections about funding sources than we do have in this proposal, and about salary guarantee. So I just want to keep that in mind and keep this amendment. If we need to make some tweaks to it, that sounds good to me, but we need to keep in mind that we all share a goal here, no matter our background, of making sure that we have a healthy university, including financially, and that other priorities are not getting diverted to support one.
We have somebody speaking online. Dan, and then Eric, and then Dan.
Assuming John, you're still waiting to speak from your original place in the queue, we'll go to Eric then.
Thank you. Yes, this is in response to the comments made by Brad Harris that it's very unusual to
require this kind of long-term financial planning from a center institute. But I'm curious, are there other center institutes that serve as a TIU that would have these kinds of permanent long-term commitments?
I can actually address that because part of the responsibility of oversight is with our office, and if I may, I also had a conversation with President Carter about this very issue, and we will make a commitment to ensure that the financial responsibility is done responsibly, the hiring and the commitments, in a way that does not harm the rest of our units. And President Carter, I have his permission to share with you that we will use strategic funds. We're also pursuing continued support of this from the legislature, obviously. But should that not be available, we will use our strategic funds that we do have available to invest in various academic matters to continue the long-term commitments. So that's just information that I'd like to share with this body before you go into voting.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure that that answers my question. The question was, just in clarification of this amendment, the response that Brad Harris noted was that it would be very unusual to require this kind of long-term, you know, in writing. And so it sounds like you're saying that putting this in writing will not pose a problem, which is great. But just in terms of this being an unusual thing to require of a center, I'm wondering are there any other centers or institutes that serve as tenure initiating units?
I appreciate the question. Let me ask Brad to weigh in on, do we require in writing our academic units to have support in perpetuity for our tenure track faculty lines? So it is. I take the point that this is unusual for a center to have tenure track faculty. In fact, I don't know of any other instance on our campus. But how do we handle this issue of long-term commitments to tenure track faculty in the academic units currently? Maybe you could clarify and speak to that issue to help this body.
Yeah, that's what I was speaking to a moment ago. Like, we don't have guaranteed funds for any tenure track faculty to retirement. So there's, we don't know right now 15, 20, 30 years from now what resources are going to be available in departments and in colleges. We do it based on analysis and projections and understanding historical trends and robust conversations with deans and other people, but there isn't a guarantee of funding for any tenure track faculty.
In any unit?
In any unit, in colleges, departments, anywhere. We try very hard to ensure that there's a sustainable plan, but we don't have guarantees of what may happen 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now.
Secretary Gardner wants to weigh in before. Thank you.
Exactly. Right. There may be programs that there are no longer courses for faculty to teach 20 years from now, and we have exigency issues and need to resolve those, so there's no guarantee.
I understand. Thank you for that clarification. Senator Gardner.
So just, as you know, I don't usually weigh in these situations, but I think Jill raised an important point about the timing of SB1 being released yesterday. As you know, if you've looked at the text of SB1, as well as Senator Cirino's comments, that it includes pretty strong language about financial exigencies, about the growing desire for power to eliminate programs and lines. So I ask us to think for a second about what the consequences are of imposing something we've never imposed on any unit or any center, which is a guarantee for perpetual fiscal responsibility, when there are several units represented in this room by senators and several units in our college that are not fiscally sound. If we take their budgets, the cost of their 30, 35-year tenure-track faculty, and the revenue, curricular or research or otherwise, that they are bringing into the university, they will not meet those standards. Do we want to literally provide by writing this language, the license to the legislature and those who ultimately will make this decision in the form of our board, a sense that we expect all of our units to be held to this standard, that they must prove that they can pay for their faculty into the future, regardless of changes, as are hitting parts of my college, in enrollments and in opportunities for external grants and funding.
Thank you. John Blackburn is next. He's online. John?
John Blackburn is recognized. JR?
Other Blackburn.
I wonder if we're not looking at a distinction here with this particular center, which was established by the legislature. The legislature has established already this center as an independent unit. And the proposal put forth by Dr. Strang was for a permanent center. I can understand why we might not normally require such financial planning, but I think this amendment is calling for what is normally financial planning, but in this case particularly, we're stuck with this center.
There is a point of order.
John, for just a quick pause there. There's a point of order from the floor. Yes, Carolyn?
Wasn't that language struck? Permanent was struck from the proposal.
Permanent was struck.
It is no longer part of the proposal that we're debating today.
Yeah, it was conventional language for all center proposals, but it's been struck for the reasons that were brought up at the last
session. Okay. I appreciate that correction. But when Susan Cole earlier said that the center will be dissolved if it becomes not viable, that is not correct. The center was established by the legislature. We're not really voting to establish this center. It's already established. We are voting in a way to approve that establishment, and I applaud the efforts to get the shared governance into what this center is doing. But I think we are looking at something that is a distinction to what we normally do, and that is we have a center already established with a budget for 2 years, and that's it, from the legislature. Does that not call for a close look at the fiscal planning, which I applaud Ashley Perez for essentially asking for here with this amendment, that we take a close look at that, and we haven't really had that presented to the Senate in the proposal.
Point of information?
That's all I want to say.
Were we disseminated the amendment? Has the amendment been sent out to senators?
I believe it was pasted.
I think the question is the question whether the amendment from Dr. Perez has been,
yes.
I thought it was supposed to be emailed out to senators.
Or in the chat.
Okay.
It's in the Zoom chat.
Right. So access to the amendment is the question.
All right, so are we ready to vote on the amendment?
No.
Okay.
I think people want to examine it first.
Sure.
I move to recess for 5 minutes to read and look over the amendment.
Okay. I think we can do that. I think we can do that by hand, though. All in favor?
We'll okay.
Take that as a yes.
That's a yes. All right.
I'm We can make our own decision.
I will wait.
I don't know how to interpret that.
I think what I'm going to do after this is done is see if there's any discussion. I'm going to issue some clarification to speak to what you've said. So if they're not ready, so what's that remedy? Because I need to get towards the other
question.
Make the other topic. So it's already 4:30.
And I don't think one question I used to it strikes me that this amendment is so, is there, can we divide the question and vote on the proposal? Because I think those who are going to vote no.
We could structurally just vote on this separately. And the question I have just is strategically is whether that will eliminate some of the strengths already in favor of the
government. I don't, I mean, it might, it puts some risk.
But if we feel that it's not too
can we treat it as
somebody can move to postpone
I'm going to just text that to my colleagues on the floor. This is when we communicate to the
board. I'm allowed a clarification to underline this point. That makes sense. That as a unit, we do not want to suffer the settlement. I'm going to actually buy another
question. If we determine if this amendment is substantive, are we going to vote on it?
This is part of what we're just discussing. And Steve proposed, and actually, I'll make sure I got it right, Steve, that we can, somebody from the floor can propose to postpone voting on the amendment until people have had more time to consider and vote on the resolution. And then we can vote to amend a previous pass.
We essentially move to postpone and vote on this amendment after until another week as a
but we can
something
that would need a majority pass, of course, but the big question is that Steve asked is strategically will that increase the likelihood of it going down as people feel like they want to vote on the amendment? My sense is probably not. Maybe a couple.
I don't think so. I think we've got a lot of people in the room on Zoom that are from AAUP that are non-voting people, so it feels like there's mm-hmm. and And if it does, it does. But I think that's...
I think an up and down vote, if you can get there, is what the will
so
of the body.
So I want to be able to... I mean, I can make that that motion. I just need to know. So it's a motion... Yeah. A motion to phone this amendment.
Francesca
to
wants to bring up another amendment. It's Enrico's. So
say what?
Francesca... From FAES wants to bring forth another amendment.
No, not. I mean,
but I know not yet. But we're 25
I'm gonna,
minutes.
Do you know what this amendment is about?
It's the whereas the Chase Center is not.
That's the Enrico thing.
Okay, I think we should.
It's not substantive.
Can I call the?
Can we call the vote on this? Or, yeah, I would call.
Okay. Question: so changes to the whereas statement, is that binding
and
like enforceable then by CAA when they do their review?
Realistically, no, because we can't hold them to financial accountability that the law does require. Which is why
I think it is 5 minutes. If I could call the meeting back to order. Thank you so much. Senator Clark.
I'd like to propose that we postpone the vote on this amendment that's on the floor to a later date for further consideration, such that we can amend it, to an original proposal that we vote on today, which is the proposal that Sue brought forward earlier.
Is there a second?
Point of information, is the senator moving to table or postpone to a specific date?
I'm moving to postpone this amendment and the vote to a later date for further consideration and consider it an amendment to an issue that is currently on the floor for a vote, so it can be amended later once we vote on that initial item.
Assuming it passed.
Assuming it passed.
Point of information, can you be more specific about when that later date, that later
February meeting?
The February meeting of the University Senate.
Can I ask a question about that?
There's a
yes,
The amendment makes a fundamental change in my eyes to the text. I do not see how we can have the amendment after the vote on the original proposal. So I don't know what the typical order of things is, but that does not really make sense.
If this proposal passes, then at the February meeting, we can vote on an amendment to it, and it will go up or down, but that'll allow us to vote on the proposal as it was presented today. That is the motion on the floor, and I think the presiding officer asked for a second if there is one.
Is that right? Second?
Yes.
We have consulted with our parliamentarians.
Can you also explain why we would do this?
My thinking is that we consider the proposal that was brought forward after significant time and effort on behalf of our Committee of Academic Affairs, with consultation of the Senate Research Committee, and...
Point of information, who is currently speaking?
Caroline Clark is speaking.
Thank you.
And input from both the research committee, the fiscal committee, all of whom can weigh in and be invited into that conversation at that February meeting. But at this point, honoring the proposal that was brought forward, if it's voted, then we can amend it. And this, my understanding is that this is within Robert's rules, according to the parliamentarian.
Yeah.
That is my motion.
I'd like to invite the parliamentarian to weigh in on the procedure itself. I'd also like to say that, as the provost, I'd like to have more time to address the issues of finance and more time to actually answer them in the sense that we generally don't, as a university, try to keep the mission as a whole and try not to subject each part of the university to the fiscal responsibility thing. For example, there are many domains that we quote-unquote lose money on that are critical to our mission that I'm not sure, as your provost, if I'm comfortable to apply that test to all the parts of the university that have tenure-track faculty. This kind of echoes what Jared was trying to say earlier. But before I do that, so I'd like the parliamentarian to weigh in on this part.
Thank you, Provost. I'll be as brief as I can. It would be in order at this point for any senator to move to table this amendment. That would be an effort to kill it. That's not what Caroline's doing. She's instead recognizing that there are significant issues about how an amendment like this might affect things, that many senators might want more time to consider, and that instead of moving to table it, there is a parliamentary motion to postpone it to a time certain, which she said could be the February meeting, which would give more time to consider it, while still allowing any senator who wishes to vote on the underlying proposal today to vote on that proposal today. And then in a subsequent discussion, if something like this amendment becomes the will of the body, it can be adopted as an amendment to a matter previously adopted. Now, it may well be that some senators are not prepared to vote in favor of the underlying motion without the amendment that Senator Perez has introduced. It's up to the body, by majority vote, if Caroline's motion were to get a second, it would be up to the body to decide whether to proceed today without fully ventilating the issue of Senator Perez's amendment on the underlying resolution. And if the body as a majority does not want to postpone her amendment to the next session, then we continue to discuss and vote on it today. But if we get a second, then the body can vote today, even though some senators might not want this, to go ahead and postpone further consideration of this amendment until the next meeting.
Thank you for that. So with that, can I ask,
is there a point of order? If we second, then do we vote on whether we vote on this now, or?
Yeah, the motion to postpone is a non-debatable motion. So if it gets a second, we then vote now to see whether the majority of the voting senators want to postpone further consideration of this amendment until the next meeting.
I second the motion. I think we need to move forward so we can actually discuss the underlying motion that we need to discuss.
So now it's been moved and seconded.
No, it's Mark Foster.
So let us move to vote on the motion to postpone the vote on the amendment.
I'd be able to do that on the Carmen.
I'm making a quiz right now. I'll give you a thumbs up.
Give 1 second for IV to set up that quiz on Carmen. Here we will be working with the Carmen voting, and so that one is more familiar, obviously.
And just so people are clear, what the vote now is about is not whether you support or oppose Ashley's amendment. That's not what you're voting on. You're voting on whether to postpone further consideration of this amendment to the next meeting. And it would come up at the next meeting only in a contingency, the way it's been structured. It would come up in the next meeting if the underlying resolution from CAA is adopted. If it's not, then there's nothing to amend at the next meeting.
Yeah, she's just getting
right
the, yep, getting it ready.
So, you ready to refresh your Carmen screen just in case?
Yeah, it will be a new quiz that will be labeled as such.
Another point of information: to amend an already passed proposal, will that require a simple majority, or will that require a higher threshold?
Just a simple majority when it comes back up.
Oh, sorry.
Point of information: what happens when it becomes 5 o'clock? Do we keep going? Does this end?
Yes.
I would very much like this meeting to, if assuming there's sufficient time and if this body feels to wrap this meeting up by 5.
Once we lose, obviously there is no mandated end to a meeting. We can extend it, but once we lose a quorum, then the meeting is
over. That's my fear, is that continuing beyond, because people may have other plans and not obligations, that's the reason.
Well, Ivy's got a stressful job today. We don't usually have to do these on the fly.
Ivy, it's through as a motion to table.
Just one more minute, please.
Okay, it should be available for everyone now. I'm going in to change the wording now.
It is available, but you can wait till she's going in to change the word from table to postpone.
It should be a motion to postpone,
yeah.
And it won't show up on the top page where all the other voting items are. You need to click the link in the left-hand column for quizzes.
And I will get the link as soon as I'm... For some reason, I'm having trouble
watching. The thing that's called motion to table?
Yeah. It's being retitled.
Is it going to erase our votes if we vote before she names it?
No.
Okay. I trust you.
Well, you could actually change the name of the vote entirely.
You could change it after.
You voted to make Ivy king of the universe. The on-call tricks.
Okay, and we're all going to get you should be. Okay. I put in everyone.
I read your emails.
Those of you who can read it, are we comfortable with the language now? Is that reflecting what Senator Clark proposed?
You might need to refresh.
So, yeah, if you wouldn't mind refreshing, the new language should load. In the actual motion, does the language.
I'll go on record as and declaring that the motion, despite what its language might currently say, is a motion to postpone to the February meeting. And invite us to go ahead and vote on the motion that's before you, regardless of what form the language currently is, so that we can move forward. We are running out of time, and at any point, somebody could call the question, and then we wouldn't have any more debate if 2/3 of the Senate voted in favor of calling the question. And we'd like to get as much discussion in before we get to that point. So go ahead and vote on whatever you've got.
So we are voting now based on our parliamentarian's wise counsel. So we'll wait for the votes to come in.
I just want to make sure I'm reading it right.
So the motion passes to postpone the vote on the amendment to the February meeting. So we're back now to discuss the original whereas motion introduced by Professor Sutherland. The further discussion on the original motion.
Did Chris have a comment?
Thank you for your patience, Chris. It's taken a minute, but here you are.
Thank you all. My name is Christopher Cade. I'm serving as an alternate today. But I just wanted to remind everyone of the purpose of the University Senate. And it's to serve as a channel for communication between the representatives of the faculty, students, staff, and administrators concerning key issues facing the university. And it is in my belief that this center is a key issue. As a student in the John Glenn College of Public Affairs, I'm required to take Public Affairs 2120, Public Service and Civic Engagement. A significant portion of the course emphasizes the importance of equitable stakeholder engagement in policymaking. And unfortunately, as I know it, the creation of the Salmon P. Chase Center lacks such engagement. The community, us in this chamber, and our constituents were not adequately involved in the decision-making process. And Ohio Revised Code, Section 3335.39, states that the center shall conduct teaching and research in historical ideas, traditions, and texts that have shaped the American constitutional order and society. However, as I've learned in my coursework, the historical tradition of this nation has often been inequitable. And by failing to engage university and community in its formation, this center's establishment reflects the inequitable tradition which will hinder its ability to fulfill its mission effectively. So I ask, how can a center hope to teach people the principles of civic engagement and intellectual diversity when its own creation lacked those very principles? Furthermore, the governance structure of this center raises serious concerns. According to Ohio Revised Code, the director is granted sole and exclusive authority to manage the recruitment and hiring process, and to extend offers for employment for all faculty and staff, and to terminate employment of all staff. This level of unchecked authority gives the director the ability to act with absolute impunity in the execution of their duties. The director is protected by tenure, does not report to the dean of the college, and appears to operate outside the oversight of the academic council. Instead, the director reports directly to the provost or the president and holds unilateral power to oversee, develop, and approve the center's curriculum. I believe that this lack of oversight is deeply concerning and runs counter to the principles of transparency and shared governance that underpin the academic integrity of this university. Among all the arguments already made, we must also consider the most pressing issue, which is funding. While the state has allocated $10 million over two fiscal years to establish the center, there is no clear plan for its long-term funding. And once that $10 million runs out, the university will likely have to absorb the center's cost. Given the current financial pressures on higher education, this could necessitate tuition increases beyond the 3% cap, further burdening students and families even further at a time when many students are already struggling to afford this institution. As a taxpayer, I do not feel that the center and the others mandated at universities across the state are the best use of our dollars. The Chase Center, as is currently conceived, does not align with our university's values of inclusion, transparency, and accountability. And I believe the state legislature's mandate will harm our campus and set a dangerous precedent of government overreach in higher education by circumventing the governing structures already in place. It is crucial that as representatives of our respective constituencies, we advocate against measures of this nature. And so I urge my fellow senators to consider these issues carefully and prioritize the long-term interests of this university. To vote for the center without addressing these underlying concerns would undermine the very principles we strive to uphold in this body and as an institution.
Thank you.
It's all yours.
Thank you. If I could just repeat verbatim what the prior senator said, I would. So I'll start there. I also just want to mention, this is not the end of legislative overreach. This is the beginning of that process at OSU and at universities nationwide. If we don't stand up to this now, this will simply serve as a Trojan horse for the legislature to begin enacting a much broader infiltration of OSU, our systems, our values, our academic freedom. We have a responsibility to say no to injustice, and that's exactly what this is. So I urge everyone to please, please, don't go along with the placation that they have been telling us for the past year around saying yes is going to keep them connected and doing the right thing. There's no guarantee of that, whether we say yes or not. So I say...
I see a hand here.
I speak today in neither support nor opposition to this proposal, but I would like to speak to the argument for an affirmative vote on this proposal made by Faculty Senator Cole behind me, that we have been entrusted to handle this proposal and that now is not the time to play political games as to not lose our right to handle this proposal or the center at all. To this, I would like to read and quote from Ohio Senate Workforce and Higher Education Committee on December 18, 2024 of the 135th General Assembly. Professor Strain was called to the committee to discuss the status and progress of the center here, and Chair Serino asked Professor Strain, I quote, "Our statutes that we passed setting up these five centers is quite clear regarding the independence of the Chase Center and the other four centers as well. I want to make sure that it's crystal clear to the Faculty Senate," he means the University Senate, "that you are reaching out and giving them an opportunity to have input, but they do not have control in any way to infringe on the independence of the Chase Center. Do you think that's clear to them?" he asks. And Professor Strain answers, "I think that's right." Strain goes on to explain how he has loved working with us and how we have treated him well. But to me, it seems apparent that we never had the right to handle this proposal or the senator at all. So the argument that now is not the time to play political games with this seems wrong. We are being thrown a bone, not entrusted.
Mike Hogan, Senator in the College of Food and Environmental Sciences. I would just make one point just to remind everybody, because I keep hearing about shared governance, to remind us that there is absolutely no shared governance in the legislature right now in Ohio. With that, I call a question.
The question has been called. It takes a two-thirds vote. So let's go to vote.
Does it need a second?
Does it need a second?
Yeah, calling the question is a parliamentary move that is inviting the body to decide whether we are ready to vote on the underlying proposal. It would close debate. It's a motion that takes a two-thirds vote in order to be adopted. So if two-thirds of the body are ready to vote on the underlying proposal, then that becomes the immediate step. And the motion to call the question is not a debatable motion. It's now for the body to decide whether two-thirds of you are ready to vote on the underlying motion on the business before you.
I mean, could we set up the vote? So do we need a second? But it's not a debatable one.
It's not a debatable motion. It should be seconded, yeah.
Okay, there's a second on the floor, so the vote is being set up to call the question.
Is it the call to question?
Yes. No matter what I write, yes.
So the word is called call the question.
Point of order. Senators that do have amendments, are they able to propose those amendments to the February meeting, such as the one that was postponed?
Yes.
Yes, that could also happen at the February meeting.
Absolutely.
Is the vote live? Are you able to see it?
30 seconds. 30 seconds.
There's no option.
Hold on. She asked for 30 seconds. Deep breaths. trying guided meditation. That's not working. Ivy, do you want me to add the question, or do you got that?
No, it should be there.
Okay. I don't have a yes, no on it yet. Oh, yeah, I do. Good. So, should be ready to go.
So, I'm told that we're ready to vote. So, if you wouldn't mind. On whether we call the question or not. The quiz should be on the front page.
It's blank.
There's no
option to vote yes or no.
There's no vote in the lane.
Yeah.
There's nothing to clutch.
My internet is just not working.
That's the problem. We have the quiz.
It's showing on your Ivy. Let me just see if I can do it. I'm having technical problems myself. Carmen's not letting me in. There we go.
Okay, it should now be on the top page of the Carmen site.
But the question still isn't there.
The question.
If you clicked on it before she added the question, it will be empty. So you have to either clear your cache or use a different browser.
So you see it now?
I see it. Yeah.
I usually see it in a different browser.
Do you have access
to it? Wonder if there's a voting system we could use in these situations. So we adopted the Carmen quizzes. We adopted it during COVID. It was just kind of exigent.
Are people able to see the question or are still having issues? No. All right.
No sense.
I'm getting
some people are and some people aren't.
It's because if you started it before the question was there, when you go back in, it's still not there.
Even if you go on a
that is so weird.
Is it easy to create a brand new question? I can do it.
A new quiz has to be created.
Okay.
This one needs to be deleted. A new quiz needs to be created. You cannot have a Carmen quiz once it has been started. That would be the most efficient way for us to move forward.
Here, Ivy, let me just grab this one.
Doing great, Ivy.
Yeah, this is. Thank you. I want to give Ivy a chance to catch her breath. The internet is also, it's as if there's lots of people trying to log into Carmen at the same time. I will do nobody look for a quiz until I give this signal.
Don't hit publish. That's what I guess.
I will not hit publish.
All the questions are recorded. Read that footnote at the bottom.
I got it.
Thank you.
All right, I think I got it. Let's try it. All right, we're going to learn a lot about Robert's Rules, I suspect, over the days and weeks to come. What the heck?
It's there.
It's working?
I don't know.
Give it a try. I'm having technical problems on my end. I'm not going to edit it. Is it showing up for you?
The label is there, but the quiz itself is not there.
It's not working.
Carmen seems to just be not working for me. So I think we have to go to raise of hands, including on Zoom, and count that way, and I will help with the counting. I apologize for the technical difficulties.
So we are having technical difficulties, as we can all tell. I appreciate your patience. Let's raise our... If you're in support of the resolution to call the question, please raise your hand.
Point of order. In Robert's Rules, under footnote 3, it says members who wish to call the question may not add to the discussion in any way immediately before calling the question. I think, I might be wrong, that this means that we couldn't have called the question in the first place and we have to go back to discussion, and then once we go back to discussion, someone else can call the question, or they can speak if they want.
We use Robert's Rules of Order as appropriate for our discussions. Nobody in this room has read footnote 3, so I think we can give grace to our person who called the question here in this case.
Could you repeat what he said?
His observation is that technically, to call the question, that's all you were entitled to do when you were recognized, and not to preface it with any other commentary. Okay? And we can't go back to that point, and we could sustain a point of order on that ground now and then re-recognize you with that clarification, or recognize somebody else. Well, so that's where we are.
Okay, so we're still voting on calling the question.
We have 45 yes online.
45 yes online. And yes. Jared, are you counting these?
I was counting. Three.
Was it out of order?
Yes.
Six.
No.
10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 8, 29, 30. So it looks like it does not. We have 45 and 30.
People online?
We got them. What's our total, Ivy? What's our total?
129.
So
that would be just a yes.
129, and we had 78, so we did not make it.
Oh, it's sorry,
two. Out of how many votes?
Out of 109, you said.
79 out of 109?
I'm not a math guy.
So.
Do we still have 129?
It's the number of voting.
That I don't know. All I have is the attendance from the beginning.
Yeah. We don't have trackers.
Two-thirds of the people here.
It's like the people voting.
It's two-thirds.
It is two-thirds.
It is? Okay.
So we do have two-thirds. So the question has been called. So we now move to vote on a different system that hopefully works, on the underlying original motion as introduced by Professor Sutherland on the Chase Center. So could we please have a vote on the underlying motion?
So this one will be distributed by Qualtrics, which we've never done before, which is
Hopefully it'll work great. If it does, we'll be using that from now on.
It should be under the heading CAA vote proposal to establish the Salmon P. Chase Center, and there's a survey link that would have gotten...
Would you mind using the microphone so people are...
I have it right here.
Thank you.
There's an email that came to your inbox that said CAA vote, and there is a take the survey link, which will take you to a Qualtrics quiz that will only go to voting senators or alternates who were appointed today.
We have double and triple checked, but mistakes can still happen. So if you are a voting senator and you're not on that list, please come and let me know, and we'll make sure Ivy gets your vote or communicate with me on Zoom. Hopefully we got it all.
If any of the senators do not have the email to vote, please let the secretary know. And who's tallying this vote?
This will be tallied on Qualtrics. In fact, I think I can also access Qualtrics, so I'll do that. The nice thing about Qualtrics is...
I appreciate everyone's patience with today's proceedings and the technical difficulties. I appreciate you hanging in there and participating in this discussion.
All right, we're already at 115 responses. While we're waiting to tally the final vote, it has been asked whether the numbers will be released. Today we're just going to say passed or not passed, but once we have everything counted, if that is, and we will confer with steering committee if that is the will of the group and if steering approves, we will obviously share the numbers. There's nothing private here. Yeah, we will. Yes, I said we will. I mean, you're on steering, so we'll just come to you and we'll share with the whole Senate, obviously, as soon as
we meet at the steering meeting.
Well, no, we'll share. If you, I mean, I'm just going to write an email to steering. You guys are going to say yes, share it, and then we'll share it with the whole Senate group. So, absolutely. Just don't want to take that on ourselves. Are you able to see the results, Ivy?
We're just not. We have senators that still don't have access to it.
A few people missing, so I have a few extra votes not on Qualtrics.
Great. You can do those. That's fine. We knew that would happen. Just tell Ivy.
Tell
it, yeah.
So it appears that several senators don't have the email link, so we're trying to figure that out. Apologies.
Ivy's got it.
Okay. Told me you're good.
Yeah.
Okay, so right now it's 56 yes, 63 no.
How many people have it? Not able.
So there is 119 total that can vote. So
we're at one, honestly, we're pretty much there. We're at 118.
Okay, so there's only one person who hasn't voted, so it doesn't matter. But if you want to say the numbers, it's 56 to 63.
The resolution does not pass. The meeting concludes.